Hi, I'm Connie Loizos.
And this is Alex Gove.
And this is Strictly VC Download. Hello, everyone. Happy Friday. It's been a while since we published a podcast, I'm realizing. I know some of you have probably been waiting on tenterhooks for the newest episode. Just kidding. But really, life has been busy. Since we last talked with David Pakman of CoinFund all the way back in December, we've hosted two Strictly VC events. One of them was in San Francisco and one in Los Angeles. We had amazing guests for both, including the co-CEO of Waymo, Jesse Liu, who is founder and CEO of the very buzzy AI hardware startup Rabbit, and WorldCoin's head honcho, Alex Blania. We've also had some really great investors join us, including Trey Stevens of Founders Fund, Mamoun Hamid and Ilya Fushman of Kleiner Perkins, and AI investors Elad Gill and Sarah Guo. The list goes on. If you are interested in joining us at one of these evenings, good news, depending on where you live or how far you want to travel. On May 21st, we're hosting our first Strictly VC evening in London, thanks to the generous help of Local Globe, which is helping us in its expansive space. We're really excited about that. Then 2 weeks later, on June 11th, we're hosting another Strictly VC event in Washington, D.C. at the city's Woolly Mammoth Theater. And that is with the help of Revolution's Steve Case. We'd really love to see you there. So look for tickets. I cannot remember the URLs of either of these events, but I'm sure if you do a little searching around, you'll find them. It is probably worth mentioning that these keep selling out. So if you do want to come, please do not wait too long. One more mention. We have a new daily show over at TechCrunch that's very much worth checking out, called TechCrunch Minute. The idea is really to catch you up on the biggest news stories of the day in an accessible, fast, and entertaining way. And, you know, in my new job at TechCrunch, I have less time than ever before, so I very much appreciate anyone who wants to get me up to speed quickly. I'm sure many of you can relate. The lovely and talented Alex Wilhelm is the host. We post this at 9 a.m. Pacific every weekday, so check it out. It's really great. Now, on to this week's interview with Arjun Sethi, a founder, operator, and investor whose star has been on the rise for years. Earlier in his career, Sethi sold a startup to Yahoo. He went on to work for Chamath Palihapitiya at Social Capital, and after a high-profile blowout with the wider team, left Social Capital with much of its other staff to create Tribe Capital. Now, 6 years later, Sethi says he has a way to help other investors better identify targets for funding based on some of the systems that were developed inside of Tribe. Whether these investors buy what he's selling remains to be seen, but Sethi, like Palihapitiya, does not have a problem when it comes to confident proclamations, as you will hear in our interview. I'm excited to be talking to you today about Termina, which I was surprised that you rolled out. I could completely miss this. So take me back a little bit. So you're at Tribe, you know, why switch roles there and then subsequently roll out this product?
I'll take a step back. So our goal was always that we want to come from a place of product and engineering, operational prowess to be able to be good investors around the table. And so what happened over time at Tribe, like if you think about ARC, you know, 1, 2, and 3 in terms of our funds, and how we evolved it over time is that we had this bottoms-up company-level data and diligence reports. We were able to start understanding top-down macro-level reports in terms of capital flows happening in the private ecosystem. So what we decided to do is like, look, we've got all this data. We've gotten really good at it. We've built our firm through this generation and being able to provide alpha returns. Why don't we now be able to deliver this product where we can let institutional investors, like let's call it a pension fund or a corporation that wants to start investing strategically into the ecosystem, to be able to derive these types of reports and to be able to understand how to underwrite software companies or AI companies, because all businesses are similar in some respect. And so it helps you to reduce risk on like what this company does and helps you deploy capital, especially since more and more companies are staying private over a longer period of time. You want to be able to understand what's happening at an innovation level, not just here in the United States, but all over the world, right? You have Latin America, you have Africa, you have India, and Latin America and India sort of being like the major areas of growth right now worldwide. In this large, complex world of private data where you don't get access to that private data, how can you start making more sense of that? And so that's why we built out Termina and launched it and spun it out of Tribe so that everyone could have access do this through this product. And it gives you the power of 1,000 associates, if you want, or analysts, however you want to define it. And I think most investors kind of have struggled to deploy AI, understand that technology. Where does it come into their workflow and investment process or partnering with companies? And it's mostly largely due to how prohibitive and costly it is to be able to adopt these types of tools and technologies or data sets. So that's what we're bringing. And that's why I was excited about it. And what it means for my role at Tribe is not too much different. Like, I was leading Tribe as managing the firm. But in terms of leading investments, I'm still doing what I'm doing. I'm still sitting on the boards of companies. But Termino is a big piece of what made us really successful. And I want to be able to deliver that, not just to myself and my team, but to be able to deliver that to all these new incoming emerging managers, if you want to call it, folks that want to deploy capital into the private markets that are crossover funds or corporations or insurance companies or pensions, which are customers today.
Okay, Arjun, let me just back up for a few minutes. First of all, I sort of lost track of this over time. How big is Tribe at this point? How many employees do you have, and what are your assets under management?
We're roughly about $1.7 billion in raised capital, AUM, and we are about 30 people bifurcated between the West Coast and East Coast.
And what are the biggest exits? I mean, it is a young outfit, so I don't know if you have a lot of exits or just stakes that are very valuable when you talk about your top quartile performance.
So it's bifurcated between our venture product and our crypto product. So we have a couple of protocols that are sort of well-known in the crypto ecosystem. So actually just recently, Nibby launched 2 days ago. It's about $1 billion plus protocol. We incubated it.
Which code is it called?
It's called Nibby, N-I-B-I.
Okay.
On the venture side, we have a couple of companies in India going public this year, actually. So ShipRocket, BlackBuck are the two that are going public. And those markets will probably be $4 to $5 billion before they go public. Our entry point was early stage series A. So we're pretty excited about our approach, no matter where we are in the world. But we're in companies like Carta, Relativity Space, Kraken on the crypto side. So there's a lot of companies that have gone from, I would say, 5 million in revenue. They're sort of between 100 million and a billion, depending on where they are today, from entry point to where they are now. So I think as the IPO window starts opening up for some of our companies, they'll start moving in that direction.
But when you talk about your returns right now, so far they're mostly on paper, except for the crypto stuff.
That's correct. We have a few that went public through acquisition in our first fund. So Upstart, but those were about 2 years ago.
Okay. And then how big is Termina? And I guess who else from Tribe is involved in this enterprise?
So our R&D team that had built out Tribe, so some of our founding team members and co-founders at Tribe, Alex Chi, Jake Elowitz. Alex Chi worked with me on across multiple companies. So if you remember when you first interviewed me where I came from and the companies I was a part of, so social gaming, mobile gaming, Yahoo, I've worked with them for almost 15 plus years.
Okay.
Jake was former data scientist at Bridgewater. So we ran a lot of their high-level macro-related infrastructure. So he came to us. And then another co-founder named Kamo Asatrian, who also had co-founded companies with me in the past over the last 15 years, all similar backgrounds in data science and infrastructure. So that was our R&D team, and we spun them out. Outside of Kamo, he came in as a new co-founder, I want to say roughly about a year ago. And then we officially launched the product about 6 months ago.
And so it's still 10 people-ish?
We are 8 today. We're a pretty small, lean, fighting machine team, but we're leveraging a lot of what you see today. So actually, one of the things that inspires us a lot is what can you do with the constraint of folks? And so if you remember Instagram, when they had sold, there were a certain amount of employees and they had an exit. I think the outcome you sort of think about with is now that I have 1,500 plus companies in my data set from seed to IPO, including private equity all over the world, how can you leverage the learning language models that are out there today? We use a whole host of them, including some of the ones that we've created ourselves. And how do you continue to analyze and enhance benchmarking capabilities of comps? And so what I mean by that is, when you think about real estate or a public company, you think about how do I compare this company or this asset to the next one? That's what we do in the private world. And so a lot of what we say, which is easier to roll off the tongue, is that we're actually the true Bloomberg of private markets because we have comparison data sets of companies that exist across all stages.
It sounds like the R&D team is fully committed to Termina at this point. Does this replace Tribe over time? Will Tribe raise a fourth fund?
We will. I mean, Tribe has a very specific alpha strategy, but I think what's more important is, when you think about any asset manager that's out there, right? So this is what Termina provides. When you think about any asset manager out there, they all have different strategies for where they're deploying. You're either early stage, mid stage, late stage, private equity. You might be venture debt. You might be a combination of both. You might be fund of funds plus direct. You might be only doing pre-IPO. There's a whole, you're talking about trillions of dollars, right, of worldwide equities capital being deployed. So this tool helps anyone at any stage to be able to be better at making investment decisions and making capital decisions. That's a key piece in the private markets. And for Tribe, we were and we are early stage investment, right? So let's just call it seed through series C is where we invest. So 50 million to 250 million enterprise values, usually our entry point. you're looking for net 10x returns. Termina specifically is enabling anybody in any asset class to be able to think about how to invest into software companies, regardless of stage. So it's two very different strategies in how you think about, you know, where you spend your time. And my whole goal is the more data I have, the more I can enable people and empower people, no matter who they are, to be able to enter parts of these asset classes. And I really think about the pension fund that is one of my customers, right? Because they are managing people's pensions. And instead of only relying on managers, they're relying on the capability of using a tool like mine to make, you know, better investment decisions, not on a horizon of 10 years, but on a horizon of 20 years, 30 years.
And Tribe is an investor in Termina?
Yeah. So because it was spun out and started there, Tribe is also an investor in Termina.
And who else is an investor in Termina?
We have some small amount of capital we raised because we didn't need to. We got profitable very quickly. A lot of revenue from our customer set, including other firms that are out there, that we didn't need to raise a significant sum. And it had been self-funded by myself and my partners until we launched it.
Okay. Can you tell me a number?
In Cume, how much we put in? That's, you know, 10 plus million.
And so you've mentioned sort of broadly who its customers are. Do you share names?
We don't. The reason we don't do it is that we have a large class of capital deployment folks that want to stay under the radar. They're using tools. And so I think typically what you'd see from any enterprise SaaS companies, in order to get customers, they put all the logos up there. We just didn't need to do it because our product sells very quickly. So our implementation time with like a enterprise client, let's call it a, you know, like your top 10 private equity firms, we have a couple of them that are customers already. You're talking about asset allocators that have 30 billion under AUM, and then asset allocators all the way to a seed level that have a couple hundred million AUM. The tool works for them both. And so since we have a large section of them, we do have case studies when you start entering NDA with us, but we don't remark who our customers are because some of them are also public pensions, some of them are government entities as well. So we just keep everything confidential.
I also just wondered, are they giving you their data? I mean, it seems like they must in order for this tool to work.
Yeah. So our companies give us data, raw data that work with us directly. So let's call it a public company or a private company that wants to leverage the same tool. They might be using it for M&A. A private equity firm will dump their whole data and database to us. And same thing with any other VC firm. So across the board, yeah, we handle a lot of sensitive data. And it's part of why we have this separated, it's a separate entity. There's a Chinese wall between everything we do.
I was going to say, like, I mean, that sounds great. How do you assure them that you're not using their data to make Tribe more competitive?
Yeah, I mean, just completely different strategy, right? Like, I think like what you allude to is that like, hey, there's like 50 VCs in the ecosystem. So like, aren't they all going to be competitive with each other? The reality is that this has been done before with other people that have incubated companies like Affinity, et cetera. It's more about like, we're a trusted brand in the ecosystem. People have known us for a long time. We've handled 1500 plus companies primary data set for a very long time. And these are the top companies that are out there. And we've never had a leak. We've never had a security breach. And I think that's part of the goal, which is why it's a separate entity, separate team, not part of the attached firm, is that you're dealing with that company. You're not dealing with Tribe as a firm.
But you are obviously are connected to both.
Yeah,
I'm just wondering if it's a concern. I mean, if I were a potential customer, I would be worried about that.
Yeah. And I think a part of it is like we just inherently built a lot of trust over a long period of time before we rolled out the product anyways, right? So when we rolled out the product, we already had customers that were working with us and this is what we had set up. The other piece is that I do, while I'm at Tribe, I also incubate other companies. So two crypto protocols that I've incubated, a Mexican fintech bank that I helped to incubate and start. So I spend my time across multiple companies, not just one. And Termina is run by Alex, Kamo, and Jake, and they're your primary interface. I come in for most of our strategic decisions when it comes to our large enterprise clients, like the private equity folks, the pension folks, and the sovereign funds.
Oh, what is the Mexican bank?
It's a company called Capital with a K. And we had helped to invest and incubate it roughly about a year and a half to 2 years ago. And it is a expense management platform for small to medium businesses across Peru, Chile, Mexico itself, and Colombia, and continuing to expand. You can think of it as we're focused on the new bank style approach while being a bank for small and medium businesses in Latin America.
Okay. So I also have to ask, so you're talking about some of your customers are these big outfits, pension funds, PE firms, you said $30 billion AUM. I would think that they already have pretty sophisticated systems in place. They've seen more than 1500, they've obviously got data on a lot of companies. So again, what is the pitch there? Why is your product better than what's inside their own businesses?
Yeah, I mean, it's the same reason any company builds software solution products for large enterprises, right? Like the insurance company in Japan has more data than anyone else in the world, but do they know how to use it? Do they know how to build software? Do they know how to interpret the underlying data that they have? Is it stored in a format that's easily accessible? I mean, this is every company that's out there, right? That builds up from infrastructure to ETL to analysis. That's the same, which is there's a lot of valuable data that we have. There's a lot of valuable data that our customers have. And so, you know, putting these pieces together is that hey, now I can help alleviate what it means for you to be able to leverage AI or LLM or AGI tools for you to be able to make better investment decisions. And while you can do it yourself, if my product is cheaper, better, faster, and more accurate than what you would do with 1,000 people, why would you have 1,000 people? And then more importantly, if you have a team that is focused on it, there are firms that have data science teams. These data science teams are always looking to build tools and data sets to be able to, you know, better perform on behalf of their, you know, fiduciary, their capital. So a lot of it is like they're able to leverage a lot more decision-making because they have this versus what they didn't have before.
So it's the data that you bring to the table combined with their own data is essentially like the secret sauce.
It's a combination of that. But you know, part of it is that you could have seen 2,000 plus companies in the last 2 years, but like, great, you have deck and financials, you have a bunch of unnormalized data. What do you do with it? How do you know it's working? You know, how do you know which company you saw? But if you ask any VC, what will they say? They're like, you know, I remember meeting this company 2 years ago. I wonder how they got better. Well, if you can query it, if you can understand what it actually looked like and the N number of companies you're going to meet in the future to be able to benchmark them against everything you saw, then you don't have to rely on your human brain. You don't have to rely on the associate that no longer works there or the team that no longer works there. You're able to have like a system of record to be able to query from, learn from, and continue to compound off of. That's actually the real power of anything, which is when you have a system and semantic to be able to look at. When I saw Airbnb, when they're 1 million revenue with like, you know, a couple hundred thousand in DAU, what are the heuristics that they looked like to be successful? Now I see the next marketplace in Indonesia that looks very similar. How similar are they? What are the specific data sets that are actually super similar versus different? And what are the metrics that really matter? You can't really do that just because you have the data sitting in like Dropbox. That's not how it works. You have to be able to get the data, normalize it, understand it, interpret it, have the system of record to be able to query against it. So it's actually a fairly complicated process that most people, you know, frankly, for the last 20 years have never actually done, even if you're a private equity firm. Otherwise, they would have built Facebook or WhatsApp or Google.
And then, so does Termina own, or I should say, does it strike exclusive data deals? I mean, I'm sure you'll say that the way you've built your product is its secret power, but I'm just wondering, you know, asking the obvious question, what's to prevent someone else from offering what you're offering?
Nothing. I mean, like, look, the reason why we exist and why the customers work with us is that we have the best data in the world. We continue to gather that on behalf of our customers, and we have the best product. And that's what I'll always continue to do. So we don't have any specific patents. Everything we do is trade secrets. And so I would say that the reason why they choose us is that our tool is not 10x better than what's out there. There isn't anything out there. And so we're like literally 1,000x better than what people's existing workflow looks like. If you look at the world of PE and VC, majority of it, I want to say all of them, there are some like very, very sophisticated shops, which some of them are also our customers. But if you look at the vast majority, what do? You're using paper, pencil, and Excel sheets. What people call themselves like masters in macro Excel sheets. Well, if you're getting data from a company, how do you know where the raw data transactions are coming from? How do you make sure you can benchmark that company against 10,000 companies? You just can't. There's just no such thing because the data doesn't exist and you haven't met that many companies in the ecosystem. So in 5 years, I'll have 50% of the world's private data and it's just impossible to compete against me. And so that's why we're very, very specific around making sure that my data set is pristine, the way in which we interpret it is pristine, the companies that we work with are able to continue to leverage it and able to opt in to that data set and contribute. And it's worked really well for us. And I think my whole goal is that as one firm, I could only do so much. As a company, I can just do that much more.
So you just said you'll have 50% of the world's private company data.
Yeah, and I would say about 4 to 5 years at our current track, at our current pace of our customers coming in, that's what we're tracking to.
Wow, that is a bold claim.
Think about it this way. How many private companies are there in the world today, like that are venture backed or private equity backed?
No idea. 5,000 more?
No, it's roughly about 50,000.
50,000? Wow.
Yeah, I have 1,500 today. And with my customers that I have today, right, like as of this morning, I do about 6,000 reports per year, and it'll probably double by the end of the year. So how long do you think it'll take me to get 50% of the world's data?
I'm going to say 4 to 5 years since that's what you said.
There you go.
So tell me what you are seeing from your data, if possible, because, you know, people are going to be curious to know where they should be investing and what they should be selling right now. What are some of the trends that you think you're seeing ahead of other people?
I would split the world into US, which is the world's largest market and most liquid, which actually, in my opinion, makes us one of the most special markets in the world. And we have a whole system behind that. And then you're looking at all the other markets that are following suit and going in that same direction or getting close, right? So it's US, China, India, and then Indonesia, and then Mexico, Brazil. That's kind of how I put the world together in terms of the amount of capital that flow that comes into private companies, whether they're venture-backed or private equity-backed. And by the way, and the span becomes a little bit larger because you can think about like traditional infrastructure and brick and mortar companies too. So I'll just take those out for a minute. So when you think about venture capital or technology companies, which is what I like to spend more of my time in, a lot of the trends and a lot of what you're seeing of companies working really well that have a very similar trait to US, let's call it 20, 30 years ago, China almost 20, 30 years ago, is India, Brazil, Mexico, and Indonesia. Like those are key markets that I think a lot of people aren't paying attention to. And we're just seeing a lot. So even on behalf of our customers, we just see fintech, healthcare, insurance, sort of going parabolic, if I was to use that word, and companies that are actually working. In Latin America, can't tell you the name of the company, but we met this company that basically helps individuals that are radiologists understand how to detect cancer and different aspects as a part of the radiology across, you know, multiple imaging centers. It's just at a faster pace. So they help with the triage of the radiologists and the patients and analyzing, you know, what they may have very, very quickly. So the radiologist doesn't have to spend a lot of time on manual labor, and they're able to facilitate the prospectus of what that patient might have back to the imaging centers and the doctors. That's huge because in a lot of these markets where they generally have medical labor shortage and expertise, and you know, you have these doctors that are going all over, like they literally fly radiologists from like Colombia to Brazil to Mexico. And I didn't know this. And then you have this company that basically is able to make, similar to how we think about Germany, I was like, you're able to make one radiologist become like the power of 100. And that's like the story that you want to hear about every technology company, that it makes it inherently deflationary and brings the healthcare cost down to a minimum on behalf of these people. That's healthcare. And you see the same thing in supply chain logistics. You know, folks that are in tier two, tier three cities in our own portfolio in India, where it's like a Shopify-esque style situation where they've never had access to capital. They've never had access to be able to sell their goods of like jewelry to folks in the United States, et cetera. So these corridors are building. So we see these trends happen. So you kind of have to understand like where we are in that cycle of commerce and capital, where we want to spend our time. And then for our own folks that are our clients across that, you know, they want to know where they want to deploy their capital. So an example I'll explain is, you look at Saudi. Saudi basically said like a large bold claim, I'm going to put X billions of dollars into these many companies. Our approach to another sovereign is actually saying, don't do that. Because if you take a look at what's happened in China, and as China had to build a vertically integrated system because they didn't have fragmented companies like you have here in the US that support each other. And when I say that, I mean like, in order for Stripe to have existed, you needed APIs to have existed in a bunch of places for them to be able to bring that together for a customer. Well, you don't have that in Saudi. You don't have that in, you know, places like China or Indonesia, and in some cases India. These things are going to emerge and happen over time. So when those folks say, where should we deploy our capital, and they're customers of ours, we tell them, look, we've already assessed on your behalf because you asked us to. It's like 50 companies. Out of these 50 companies, the ones that really matter are these three or four. But it's up to you to decide how you want to deploy the capital. How do you want to, if you want to deploy it to funds or direct, or do you want to help them go public? Because these four or five companies over the next 10 years for you are your Google, your Facebook, you know, your Alibaba, your Alipay. And that's going to help enable continued commerce and continued growth in your economy. And instead of spraying and praying, like which is what everyone kind of tells you to do, you can actually be much more surgical in your approach. And by the way, which is the country that's done that really well? Well, Singapore. Singapore's done that very, very well with having two organizations like Temasek and GIC do this for over 50 years. So we point to them and say, if you want to have the same capabilities, you leverage our system, you can do that by assessing your bottoms-up economy, your macro economy through our tool, because we have real-world data around your private markets.
Arjun, you know, maybe the bigger question is, you're talking about amassing half of the world's private company data in 4 or 5 years. I think there are people that look out on the horizon and wonder how many companies we're going to have in the world. I mean, based on what you're seeing and the capabilities of AI that you are yourself taking advantage of, I mean, are there going to be as many companies to invest in, period? I mean, based on what you're seeing, how is the, I guess, the private company landscape going to change? We've got 50,000 companies right now. I mean, in 4 or 5 years, what do you think is going to be the number?
We have a framework called growth accounting, which means you have a certain amount of companies that are started, new ones, certain amount of companies that continue to get reinvested into, and then certain amount of them that will churn. So that's normal. That's why when I say 40 to 50,000, I'm trying to account for, you'll probably have, you know, for a specific set of that landscape, maybe 10,000 companies fail. That's fine. You have an attrition rate, you have a continued compounding rate, and you have some companies that work that some don't, all over the world. The difference this time, what I think a lot of people forget about, is that software has only been around for 20, 30 years in the way in which we think about it and how we build it. So that enabled a lot of folks to start building software across multiple verticals, right? So when I say healthcare, fintech, our financial services, that's two separate things. When you think about crypto, people may be down on crypto, but you know, we're at all-time highs almost. And crypto is being adopted all over the world. AI is being adopted all over the world. Workflow software is being adopted all over the world. And you have these new markets that were never there before that are becoming big. India is becoming big, right? Like it's your next China. That's a huge amount of economic growth that's happening because they're going to be the second or third largest economy in the world as well over the next, you know, what, 20 years. That's not a very long time. So when you think about all these new companies and people building these companies, it becomes really important around where you think about deploying your capital, how to think about it, where is it safe versus where it's not. I actually think there's way more noise in the world than there's ever been before, similar to how you think about more data and access there. So you got to figure out how to be able to spend your time. And you can't hire an army of people to figure this out. You need more tools and interpretation and analysts and analysis of that, which is not too indifferent than the public markets. Public markets, while they've shrunk, they've gotten more complicated, more liquid, much larger. And then you have more public markets all over the world that have started as well over the last, you know, 20, 30 years. Japan is back. China is still hanging in there. They're continuing to grow and compound. India has come out of nowhere. And you're going to have Mexico and Brazil pop up as well. Like those markets are becoming stronger and more liquid. That actually makes it more complicated than it was before.
What is your business model?
We charge software as a service fee. Most of it is license oriented or annual contracts. And it's for an unlimited number of reports, depending on who the customer is.
Interesting. And there's no sort of transaction fee on top of that. Sort of like you're saying, we're so sure of what we're going to do that we want to, well, we'll take less money and take more of a return. Nothing like that.
No, we're 100% a software company that's providing software services.
Thank you so much. Really nice to reconnect at long last. It's, you know, exciting to see you spinning up something new.
Thanks very much for listening. We look forward to seeing you back here soon. In the meantime, don't forget to check out our upcoming Strictly VC events in London in May and Washington, D.C. this June. Also, on April 25th in Boston, TechCrunch is hosting a Founder Summit to empower early-stage entrepreneurs from pre-seed to growth stages on their journey to success. You can find out more about all of these great events at techcrunch.com/events. Have a great weekend, and we'll see you back here soon.